Okay, this week we're so excited. We're going to read Parshas Emor, which of course begins Emor al Kohanim bnei Aharon, that Hashem tells Moshe speak to the Kohanim, the children of Aharon. Why are they both referred to as Kohanim and bnei Aharon? So Ramban comments that when it comes to Karbonos, they're called Aharon and they are called Aharon Ubanav, without mentioning the Kohen status. Here, where they're told to not become Tameh, even when not in the Mikdash, so therefore the stress is on their own unique status, that of the Kohanim. The reason that they can't become Tameh is the fact that the status of being Kohanim is on them all the time. It's not just Aharon Ubanav, it's you are a Kohen all the time. So Rav Gifter Zatzal pointed out that according to the Ramban, the Kohen is never to become Tameh because of his status, and that there's a Heter in the case of his relatives when his relatives pass away. In other words, a Kohen is obligated to not become Tameh, and the only thing is, when his relatives pass, he has a responsibility to allow himself to engage in the Heter. Rambam sounds like he's of the opinion that the reason why a Kohen is allowed to become Tameh for a relative who passes is because of the obligation to mourn for relatives. So the difference, says Rav Gifter, would seem to come to the case of the Kohen Gadol, who's not allowed to become Tameh for relatives. Ramban would explain that this is the result of an even higher status, where the Heter doesn't exist. And the Rambam would need to explain that the obligation to mourn comes from Rachmanos. And here the same Av HaRachamon doesn't allow him to become Tameh as part of the Rachmanos of a relative. He is above that personal level of relationship. However, we are told, lo yitama bal biyamav leichalo, that a husband should not defile himself for a wife who is not legitimate. Rashi explains that we're dealing with a Kohen who marries somebody he's not allowed to, and Beis Din was commanded to demand their divorce. Ostensibly, the Beis Din did its job, but it was the Kohen who ignored the Beis Din. So the Beis Yisrael, the Gereba, points out that despite the way that the person responded to the bigger issue, the Torah is teaching us that in regard to the issue of how to proceed post-death, we give him mitzvahs because we never give up hope on him. That's a pretty powerful lesson on the fact that no matter how far from Torah a person travels, we should never give up because the Torah doesn't give up on him, and he should never give up. The Torah doesn't give up on him. We're told, Kedoshim yu le'lohem, that they should be holy to their God. Now, what type of holiness is being described here? So Rav Amital Zatzal noted that the Torah explains that what makes a person holy is not all kinds of lofty things, but rather it's the simplest foundations of interpersonal relationships, the prohibition against stealing, the prohibition against stealing, speaking Lashon Hara, the prohibition against hating one's fellow man, just as we learned about in last week's Parsha. That is true holiness, being connected to the world and behaving in accordance with the fundamental morality towards others, not isolating and engaging in higher matters. Kohanim, we're told, have to become Tameh for the sake of burying relatives. The halacha could have been that the Kohanim, the holy people, are the nation who are dedicated exclusively to Kedushas Hashem. They're beyond all regular emotions associated with mourning, and therefore they're not to be Metameh themselves. But the Torah insists that even they, or maybe especially they, must become Tameh for this purpose. After we read about the Kedushas HaKohen, we're told Moadei Hashem, that we should think about the Moadim. And the question has to be asked, the majority of the parsha deals with Parshas HaMoadim. Why does this section appear in Toras Kohanim? Are the holidays limited to the Kohanim? So Marana Rav Shechter Shalita used to always tell us that as far as the Mishmaros were concerned, the job of being a Kohen was limited to the involvement of the Kohanim. But it was the fact that the Kohanim were also charged to be the ones whose job it was to teach the Torah to the masses when they were not on the Mishmar, that's what puts it into the Toras Kohanim. They're the ones who are going to have to teach, and they have more opportunities to teach on Yomim Tovim and Shabbosos. And not only Shevet Levi, not only the Kohanim, but all of Am Yisrael would have that opportunity. And so anyone who joins in, as the Rambam says in the famous comment at the end of Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel, and so therefore, Moadei Hashem, which is the most fundamental piece, Ves Chukosai, Ves Mitzvosai, Becho Moadei Yishmoru, as the Navi points out in Yechezkel, this message over here teaches us that as far as these Moadim are concerned, these Moadim are there to be a time for the Kohanim to do their main job, Yoru Mishpatech Eli Yaakov. In regard to the Omer, we're told, that you should bring the Omer, the beginning of your reaping, to the Kohen, and you should bring a Karban. So why is the Karban of Omer not mentioned as part of the Karbanos of the second day of Pesach in the Musaf? If it's a Karban, shouldn't it be listed over there? So Rav Sacks Shalita, the Rosh Hashiva in Landers, suggested that while the Shtei Alechem of Shavuos appears both here and in the Karbanos section in Parshas Pinchas, the Karban HaOmer does not. And accordingly, the Omer must not be a Karban of the Yontif, and so therefore, it doesn't get mentioned in our Tefillah, which would also seem to explain why the second day of Hallel doesn't get its own whole Hallel, even in Eretz Yisrael. You see, the Gemara in Erechin on Daf Yud Aleph explains that in point of fact, the reason we say a whole Hallel is Chalukim b'Karban Oseim. Each day of Sukkot is got its own unique Karban. On the other hand, when it comes to Pesach, it's the same Karban. There's no uniqueness to each and every day. However, if we were to assume that the Karban HaOmer would be unique, then there would be a need for a Hallel. Rabbi Sacks consequently points out that since that is the case, that the Omer is not considered part a new Karban as part of the Yontif, but rather it is a Matir that is part of the agricultural situation, it makes a difference. We're told afterwards, after the parasha Samoadim, we are also told Tzavis Bnei Yisrael v'yikhu elecha shemen zayis zach. The Bnei Yisrael were told to take shemen zayis, pure olive oil. And Rashi explains that this section speaks of the mitzvah of the actual Neiros, and when we were told the same mitzvah in Parshas Tetzaveh, that was in regard to the construction of the Mishkan. But the main mitzvah of lighting is mentioned here in Parshas Amor. There it was just a means of being ready to be commanded later on. So the question has to be raised, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu give a command at Parshas Tetzaveh only to be able to follow through on that command here by telling them to light the Neiros? So Moshe Feinstein Zatzal explained that the oil of the menorah needed to be zach, because it represented a Torah that was zach. Unless one thinks that there was personal incentive in the Karbanos, or in the appointment of the Kohanim, or in the building of the Mishkan, so Hashem commanded that this was not the case. And thus the command comes, zach, right? V'yikhu elecha Hashem and zayis zach, to be pure, as the Torah itself is, to be perfectly clear that Hashem's Torah is free of personal incentive. Rav Moshe went on to explain that Menucha Shabbos is the same way. And the fact is that we take Menucha on Shabbos not because we're tired, but rather it's a means of recognizing Hashem's ways and emulating them instead of determining how we want to rest and when we want to rest. Finally, at the end of the parasha, we read the famous story about the Megadif, the one who cursed Hashem. And we're told by Yitzei ben Isha Yisraelis, Vahu ben Ishmetzri Besoch ben Yisrael. We read about the son of a Jewish woman, who went out and fought with a Yisraeli, a regular Yisrael. And they fought within the camp. So why does the Torah need us to know that they were fighting? The point of the story is that some person went ahead, and he was Mekal al Hashem. So Reb Leib Chasman Zatzal explains that the Torah wants us to know that what brings one to do such major averos, had the person not come to a fight, he would never have cursed Hashem. And so therefore, that is an important element to the story, and something we need to consider. If we are fighting, we may come to, God forbid, curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Finally, in the Haftorah, we're told, V'akohanim alfiyim b'nei tzadok asher shamru es mishmaris mikdashi. We read all about the Haftorah, all about the Nevuah of Yechezkel in regard to Tumas Kohanim. And the fact of the matter is, it's almost exactly identical to the Parsha. So what's being added in the Haftorah, in the Nevuah? So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal is quoted as having explained that the Kohanim at the time of Yechezkel were not all keeping the Kedushas Kohuna, the sanctity of the Kohuna. And so the Parsha is telling us that the Kohanim need to be kosher. But the Haftorah is telling us that they're going to continue to maintain their existence even after the Chorban, and that the Kedushas Kohuna is proof that they will need to keep that Kedusha again in the future, B'vias Goel Tzedek B'mehera B'yameinu. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give us the wisdom and the ability, the heart and the soul, to be able to observe the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to preserve Kedushas Am Yisrael, led by the Kedushas HaKohuna, bringing us ultimately to a Shabbat Shalom to all.